Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly are, or did they change history? Good evening, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they've watched together long ago. We give each movie a score from memory and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. And then we re-score the movie. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. You all good?
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
I was going to ask you a question based on our last episode.
Okay.
Did your boss happen to listen to the episode that we recorded?
It's quite possible. I'm not entirely sure yet.
Uh-oh. Well, let's see how that pans out.
Yeah.
That's an anecdote waiting to happen. Other than that, any other classic anecdotes that have happened to you this week?
Yeah, actually. I do have one. But I don't know if it makes any sense anymore.
Let's hear it. I'll be the judge of that. Let's hear it.
I thought it would be a good story, but now thinking about it, maybe it's just not.
Well, I think the listeners and I can judge whether or not it's a good story. Fire away. Go ahead.
I just found it quite interesting as a personal thing, really. I was invigilating an exam on Monday, which doesn't time.
Anyway, back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast. We have a lovely email.
Okay.
And this email comes all the way from Spokane in Washington, which is on the northwest coast. I used to know somebody in Spokane, or I do know somebody from Spokane who probably doesn't listen to this.
Oh.
But this is and it's also from twins, which is astonishing. So it comes from two twins whose names are, and I'm assuming these are their real names, Mimi and Aurora.
Nice. Is if one of those them CGI, like Freddie
I don't
Highmore.
Think so. As far as I can tell from their email, they're actual real twins.
Wow.
And they have written us a lovely email through our email, and they've said, "Dear Dean and Sam, we're sisters, and we listen to your podcast every week. It reminds us of the times that we went to the movies together when we were presumably about Sam's age," because they then go on to reference some of the movies that they've watched together. And they ask this question. Their question is this: if you had a time machine and you could go back and watch any movie for the first time again, which movie would you choose to watch?
If I had a time machine, so yeah. Pretending that I don't have one currently.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Mimi and Aurora, God bless them, don't know you are, in fact, Sam the time traveler.
That's
so
true.
Assuming that you do have a time machine,
okay.
Which movie would you go back and watch for the first time? Good question, by the way.
It is a good question, yeah. I feel like there's a lot of, like, obvious ones. I feel like I always twist the question. I feel like there's some films that I hadn't seen at the cinema that I would like to go and see and have the chance to relive. But I don't know, maybe it'd be quite cool to go and see Lord of the Rings as it came out.
Yeah.
But I have also seen them in the cinema since. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really count. So it has to be something that I wouldn't have seen before. Maybe Revenge of the Sith anyway. That doesn't answer the question. Because that was such an experience for me as a kid. So it'd be quite cool to just relive it anyway. I don't watch a lot of movies. It's Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, and Spider-Man. That's it.
It's such a good question. And then I kind of thought a lot about what my answer would be. And I think I've probably got three answers. Okay, so just to be, like you, a little bit complicated. So number one, I would think I would like to go back and watch Return of the King again. Okay, that's number one, because I love that film, as everybody knows. And but it's become a little bit more difficult to watch because I've seen it so many times. So that's number one. Number two, if I knew then what I knew now, I would love to go back in time and rewatch the Wallace and Gromit trilogy with you.
I almost said
cinema.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Because I think I would appreciate that more, particularly based on what then came after that. And then the third one would be that I'm old enough to have seen Star Wars when it first came out. And so I think I'd like to go back and watch Star Wars as it was then, not Episode 4, but just Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back and see it on the big screen and try and appreciate it as a child but knowing what I know now. So I think that's my answers. So
I have one, which I'm going to say anyway, even though it was only a couple of years ago. I'd like to see the second Spider-Verse again for the first time. Mm-hmm. Because when I saw it, I was too distracted with things going on at work, so it wasn't quite enjoyable. But yeah. I'd quite like to do that one again, fresh, you know what I mean? Yeah,
yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's true that sometimes when you watch a movie for the first time, there's other things going on, and so yeah. You don't really appreciate it. But it's a really nice question, and Aurora and Mimi, if indeed those are their real names, also go on to say that they really like our podcast and they're trying to convince all of their friends to listen. So thanks.
That's nice.
So let's get on to our movie of the week, which is Toy Story 3, which we went away and we watched. And I gave this movie an 8 out of 10, and so did you. So tradition dictates that I ask you this question, which basically ruins the rest of the episode. Do you think your score has changed?
Not really.
Oh,
but it'd be interesting to know what we both share as an opinion.
Okay.
I feel like saying that we're going to get to the same result that we've already got, but I think the way we get there is going to be interesting.
Okay, that's a good way of looking at it. My first question for you then is, we have talked a lot about, on this podcast, we've talked a lot about unnecessary sequels. So do you think Toy Story 3 is a necessary sequel or an unnecessary sequel?
Right. So this was going to be my out-of-pocket take, which is a lot less of an out-of-pocket take than it is just an opinion. But I'll get into it now because it's relevant to the question. I think if you look back at this as a trilogy to begin with, I think this is a completely necessary sequel following from Toy Story 2. I think everybody sort of always knew that Andy would grow up, and there's the question of what are you going to do with your toys when you grow up. And I think it's a... especially for me anyway, a lot of children grow up thinking, well, I'm not going to keep this forever, and then it just gets sad because you get attached to it. And I think in that sense, it's not an unnecessary sequel. It plays off the themes of the first two quite well, whilst also being relevant to the storyline and the plot. And I think my out-of-pocket take is Toy Story... because everybody thinks Toy Story 3 is the perfect ending, and then Toy Story 4 comes along and sort of ruins that. I think in the grand scheme of things, Toy Story 4 will be more irrelevant and more unnecessary than Toy Story 3 is. It'll be relevant to the story and the timeline, but when it comes to Toy Story 5 coming out, everyone will say, well, we definitely didn't need Toy Story 4, but Toy Story 3 is fine. Did that make sense?
It makes absolute perfect sense. I think the sequel is unnecessary, okay?
Right?
But it makes itself necessary by how good it is. I don't think anybody sat down and designed a trilogy and said this is episode one, this is episode two, and this is episode three. Episode one is the adventure of how they meet, and then you've got the development into two, and then you get to the third movie, which is, and this is when their owner or the person that is their child has grown up, and they all feel unnecessary, but it's got a really happy ending when the toys are passed on to somebody else. If you sit down and design that as a trilogy, that makes perfect sense. But I don't think anybody designed it. So I think what Toy Story 3 does very well is round off the trilogy, and it makes it feel like it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
But if you actually go and watch Toy Story 1 and 2, there's no need for a Toy Story 3. But
no.
It becomes necessary because of how well written it is and how well it is the kind of full stop on a story. I think it's unnecessary, but is so cleverly written that it's made itself necessary.
I think that's a really good way to put it, yeah.
So well done to the writers. And
absolutely.
And it is another Pixar winner, isn't it? I mean,
it is
just such a good script. It's a brilliant script. Everything about it just works really, really well.
I also think it's got a really strong opening. The opening to Toy Story 2 is one of my favourite openings of a film ever, because you've got that sort of intense Buzz Lightyear video game thing, and it's so realistic and it just adds to the story. But this one sort of, it really works because it catches you right away and it makes you just want to see more of that world, but it is in reality just a kid playing. And I really like that sort of this is a kid's imagination, it's real to him, but it's just a kid playing. And it just works so well. And it's also the transition from there with the song, especially being like, he's going to get older, he's going to stop playing. It's just, it's mm-hmm. such a brilliant opening. But also to the point where I want the film to end a lot sooner than it does, because I'm not ready for the heartbreak.
I thought, as I was watching that, it's interesting you said that, as I was watching the opening, I was thinking there's a real, you could make a really meta, if that's the correct modern phrase, Toy Story, in which the whole thing is just the child, it's just the imagination of a child.
Yeah.
So you could make a whole movie and it'd be a magnificent adventure. And at the end, the twist is that this is just the game that Andy has been playing with the toys. I thought and you could do within that universe, you can do absolutely anything.
True. Yeah.
You don't have to have this kind of narrative that runs of a timeline of Andy getting older and so on. You can just do anything you like in the universe where you're telling the stories that Andy is creating.
It's a bit like that Harry Potter joke where at the end of the books in the film, it just says, and he woke up under the cupboard under the stairs.
Yeah.
So, oh, it was all a dream.
It was all a dream. I remember when I was at school, I was probably about 7 or 8, I wrote a story that I really liked. And I wrote pages and pages and pages of this story. And I got to the end and I used that. And he woke up and it was all a dream. And my teacher, who was called Mr. Girling, if he remembers me, said, no more, you can't say that. It's never just a dream. So there you go. That's a thing I've never forgotten. Because I think at some point everybody does that, don't they? Writes a story and they say, yeah, he woke up and it all been a dream. It's very difficult to talk about Toy Story movies and their cast, because it's basically the same cast all the way through. And it is the perfect cast, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone else who could quite pull it off, especially for Buzz and Woody of being Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. Who else could actually do that as such a pair? I mean, maybe Tom Hanks' brother who does the impression for the toys. But you know what I mean, yeah.
And it's interesting because I remember, I have a memory of, I don't know if you remember this. We were watching the Polar Express movie.
Oh, yeah.
And you said, that voice is Woody from Toy Story or something like that.
Uh-huh.
It might have been your sister, I don't know, but somebody said, oh, that's the voice of Woody from Toy Story. And I just thought that was interesting. That was a long, long time ago. I thought it was really interesting that for you, or your sister, because I can't remember who actually said it, the voice of Woody and Tom Hanks is essentially the same thing.
It's weird that happens with Pixar, because I said that about Sully and Monsters, Inc. as well.
Yeah.
There's John so Goodman, many, that's his name, yeah.
Yeah, so when you hear John Goodman, it's impossible not to hear Sully. To go through the cast a little bit, we know Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Joan Cusack, John Ratzenberger, Wallace Shawn, all these people as that have been in all of them. But then there were two new members of the cast in this. Or actually, there were probably three. And they were Ned Beatty, has lots of hugging bear. I don't know if you know the actor Ned Beatty.
Possibly, yeah. If you said what he was in, I'd probably know from something.
He was one of those actors that was a very popular character actor in the 1970s and the 1980s.
Right.
And he plays Lex Luthor's sidekick in the original Superman movies. And so by the time we get to when this movie comes out, 2010, he's obviously sort of a much older guy.
Yeah.
And just a fabulous, fabulous actor. I mean, he was probably in his 70s when he made this movie, and he had been in, you know, he was in so many kind of classic films of the 70s. He was in Deliverance, All the President's Men, Superman and things. And so he was this kind of, you know, well-respected actor. But I just thought he was great. I just loved his voice, that kind of southern drawl. And then I didn't know. I was reminded of this just by the credits. I didn't know that it was Michael Keaton that did the voice of Ken.
I noticed it halfway through the film because I looked on the internet and it was just like, how is that Michael Keaton? It doesn't sound anything like Michael Keaton. And I know it was a few years since I've probably seen him in something recently. But like, how was that even him, especially for Ken?
It was just, I loved Barbie and Ken in this movie. Yeah. I have seen the Barbie movie. I won't lie to you. Okay.
I've seen it twice. I had to.
Secret Sam, the secret. I actually quite enjoyed the Barbie movie, but let's not get off topic. But I think this is the best Barbie and Ken in the history of cinema. I thought they were so funny.
I think I'll agree with that. I think, yeah.
I just thought the character of Ken as this kind of incredibly vain, dressy-up guy was hilariously funny. I really, really liked it.
I also found it interesting that the voice of Barbie is the voice of Ariel from The Little Mermaid.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But there are quite a lot of sort of Pixar actors and actresses who kind of then end up in lots of the movies, right?
Yeah.
So I thought it was a really, really solid cast, and you can't argue with it. In fact, I'll ask a question. Is it the best animated movie cast of all time?
Yes. I don't think there's another option that I can think of there. I would say Wallace and Gromit, because that's where my heart is, but most of the time that's just one person, so it's not really much of a cast. Another thing I did want to say about the cast quickly, though, I think Timothy Dalton nails that role.
Oh, Timothy Dalton's fantastic. So funny. And that, you know, how it says something about Pixar, Toy Story, and all of that they can convince Timothy Dalton, classically trained actor, formerly James Bond, to come in and play a slightly camp English hedgehog. Just genius. I love the bit at the end when he's doing his play. When they're doing the credits at the end, just thought that was, so funny. And again, that's another person I'd forgotten that was in it, Timothy Dalton, in these little roles. Brilliant.
I feel like Timothy Dalton's one of those actors who's got such high prestige, but he turns up in a Toy Story movie and then a series of Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very random. Yeah.
And there's quite a good kind of supporting cast. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg's in there, isn't there? Laurie Metcalf. And all these people just kind of appear, and it's great. I think if I did know I'd forgotten, and I hope I'm not ruining a piece of trivia for you here, but that Tim Allen and Tom Hanks insisted on being in the same studio when they were recording their lines.
I did have that as a bit of trivia, yeah, but it was one that I knew as well, because it's just, I think the reason they wanted to do it is because it sort of, it works for the character, and it's better to have someone to play along opposite, especially when they've known each other for all these years, and even the characters have known each other for that long too, more or less.
You know, Tom Hanks has a career outside of Toy Story. Okay, he's probably gone on now to be one of the most respected quality actors in Hollywood. He's won a couple of Oscars. Everybody knows who he is. He's become the kind of elder statesman of Hollywood. So Toy Story is a thing that he does and obviously loves doing. Tim Allen has done Home Improvement, the sitcom, and Toy Story. So do you think Tim Allen is just sitting around waiting for them to just come up with another Toy Story film?
That, and for him to be Santa again, yeah.
Oh, of course he's in the Santa Claus as well.
They did two seasons of a Disney Plus show where he comes back as Santa as well. So I think it's just the case of, waiting to be Santa.
They're putting the schedule together, like, right, Tom, yeah, when are you free? And Tom goes into a schedule, says, well, I'm doing this movie. I can be available for 6 months in 2024, between March and September. And that's when we'll schedule it. They get in touch with Tim. Tim, are you available? Just whenever you want me. I'm ready tomorrow. Where's the script?
It takes a few rings to get Tom Hanks to answer, but Tim Allen sat next to the phone.
Like, literally, he's actually got a phone, you know, like he's got one of those toy phones, like the Fisher-Price toy phone that exists in this movie, and when it goes off, he's like, this is Tim Allen, I'm ready to play Buzz Lightyear. So they're just waiting. Did he do the Buzz Lightyear voice in the Buzz Lightyear movie?
He didn't, no. He might have made a cameo, I can't remember. It's Chris Evans.
I thought it was somebody else.
Yeah, but it's interesting because that means the entire time Tim Allen's been doing a Chris Evans impression as if he was a toy.
Is that not slight? I mean, I haven't seen that movie, but I do know that the opinion of it was not great.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a box office bomb as far as I know. I haven't seen it, so I can't talk about whether or not it's any good. But do you think that's because they were sacrilegious in not giving Tim Allen the voice of Buzz Lightyear?
I think there's a lot of reasons, to be honest, but it could be that. I think as a generational thing, Tim Allen is Buzz Lightyear, and it is a bit weird to just go, he is a Hollywood actor that everyone knows and loves. He's now Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah. Yeah. Who would do such a thing? How dare they?
I'll just say, so, no hate on any of these actors, by the way.
Oh, absolutely not. No hate on all of them. I mean, I love them. I love Tim Allen. I love Tom Hanks in it. I particularly like Joan Cusack. It's just great. They're amazing. And they do such a good job. I just think it's really funny that Tom Hanks has got this enormously impressive career and Tim Allen is Santa and Buzz Lightyear. I'm sure he's done other things. If you're listening, Tim, I apologise to you.
Hi, Tim.
He's probably not listening.
I hope he is.
Did you know that the when they were putting this movie together and they were writing it and things, actually there's quite an interesting story about how they wrote it. Do you know the kind of background history on this?
I don't think so, no.
So they started writing it way back in sort of 2004-05. And then, long story short, there was a big falling out between all the people at Disney and all the people who were doing X, Y, and Z. And ultimately the film was cancelled. They weren't going to make a Toy Story 3. It went through all these sort of pre-production problems. And then ultimately they decided that they were going to make it. And there had been a script already written. So when they then got around and they got the green light to finally go ahead with it, they decided they'd write the script again completely. There'd be a brand new script. And so it's this really convoluted history of how this film came about. And so they got rid of... So there's nothing in this movie that is anywhere near the original script. It's completely different. Wow. And so when they sat down to write this movie, they decided that they wanted to make it what it was. So they sat down, the director of the movie said they sat down, they watched every single prison movie they could think of, and they decided that they would make the toys are in prison, and they use all these kind of prison movie tropes in
That's interesting, actually, because I made a note while I was watching the film, because I do that, and it was that Woody's plan requires a lot of intricate details that he couldn't have possibly known. So there's the tape that was just conveniently there to stop the monkey, the moon being in the right position to have the light, a hole for Mr. Potato Head to get through. And I thought, is this just a play on sort of spy films that have loads of conveniences? So I guess that does make sense and backs that up. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I just isn't the plan is, I was glad you said that, because although I really liked it, you watch it and you think, there's no way.
Yeah.
Absolutely no way you can plot that. And Andy says, I've got a plan. And then 10 seconds later...
Woody.
What did I say?
Andy.
Andy. Woody says, if we've got a plan. And then 10 seconds later, this magnificently complex plan has taken shape.
It was just all of these weird things all happening at the same time that just needed to happen at that exact moment. But I liked it in a way.
And you have to kind of suspend your disbelief.
Yeah.
Because it's like the King Kong moment at the end of King Kong, isn't it? Like, oh, surely they're cold standing on top of the Empire State Building having a cuddle. If that's what you're fixating on, this is not the movie for you. No. So the idea that, it's a very complex plan that these toys could animate themselves and have got real-life personalities. Yeah. But I did watch it think, it's all a bit convenient. I did think it was really funny when he is the tortilla bread and he falls to pieces. That really made me laugh. Did you know the original Mr. Potato Head was just a bunch of eyes and arms and a hat that you could just stuck on a real potato?
I think I did know that, yeah.
that's such a brilliant toy, isn't it? Right, gents. We've got these potatoes. Yeah, brilliant. We'll make them into a toy. Well, what you do is... Here's some plastic eyes, shove them on, you got a toy. And somebody went, I love that idea.
It's a bit like Toy Story 4, when one of the main characters is just a spork. It's like, put some eyes on it. And then they started selling sporks with little googly eyes and things like that, yeah.
Oh, I know, it's a work of genius. Toy Story is a work of genius, in the sense that how can you... It's almost... I mean, there's a cynical side of me as I get older that says... Somebody sits down and says, right, boys, we need to make a movie. This movie is going to sell lots and lots of toys, so it's going to be about toys. And everything that is in the movie, you can reproduce and sell as a toy. And it's such a good way of marketing the movie. Of course,
it really is.
Of course it's going to be successful. It's going to make a fortune. You've got all the licensing deals. You've got all of that and everything else. And before you know it, you've got a global phenomenon. It helps that the movies are good.
Absolutely, yeah. Good point. It is weird because it's also like a personal safety announcement from Pixar all the time to play nicely, and that some toys are for specific ages too.
Yeah.
It's a bit like an instruction manual for all the toys you're going to buy.
It is, yeah, it is. Here's the thing that I was surprised by. Okay, the budget of this movie was $200 million. That's not a surprise. That, you know, it's a brilliantly animated movie. How much do you think it made at the box office, if you don't already know?
I don't think I do know. I think possibly, I was going to say double that, but that seems a bit too high. So maybe that and a bit more?
Okay, this is the bit that surprised me. It was $1 billion.
Wow.
Just a shade over $1 billion is what this movie made. It was the highest grossing animated film of all time until a film that came out in 2013. Which film in 2013 became the highest grossing animated film of all time?
Oh, don't know about... Was it Monsters University?
It wasn't. It was. You'll kick yourself. Frozen.
Oh, of course, yeah. I haven't seen
but,
that.
But we can continue the challenging Sam's trivia. Okay?
It okay. Was,
so in 2018, another film, animated film, becomes the highest grossing animated film of all time. So which film in 2018 becomes the highest grossing animated film of all time?
Frozen 2.
No, although there is a number 2 at the end of it.
Oh, okay. What was the sequel that came out in 2018 that's animated? I don't know.
I've pursued this pointless random questioning because I'm staggered by the answer. So the highest grossing animated film of all time is Incredibles 2.
Wow. I would not have put that there.
Who would have thought that? It made an absolute fortune, Incredibles 2. $1.243
billion. That's impressive.
I don't think I've even seen it.
I've definitely seen it twice, I think. Yeah.
But this film was just huge. It made $1 billion at the movies. Movies don't make $1 billion.
No.
It's just a thing. Think of all the movies that we've watched. This is the first $1 billion movie that we've watched. And that's
something.
If I'd asked you of the 5 movies that we've watched together, which was the $1 billion movie, this wouldn't be the one that you would say.
No, I probably wouldn't be able to say at all, but no.
Getting slightly ahead of ourselves, Toy Story 4, also $1 billion movie.
Oh, wow.
So it makes all the sense in the world that they would think, you know what, we should just do a Toy Story 5.
Yeah,
because it makes a lot of money.
I can see them. Yeah,
but it was also successful artistically. How many Academy Awards do you think it was nominated for?
Oh, 3.
5.
Oh, okay.
It was nominated for 5 Academy Awards. It won Best Animated Feature and Best Original Song. But it was also nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, that's actually really interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It
didn't sound genuine, but you know, no, it is.
No, it is. It was. In fact, since it was nominated in 2010, no other animated film has been nominated for an Oscar.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm. So only 3 have ever been nominated for an Oscar. And we've done this game before, Beauty and the Beast and Up. But only this was nominated for an Oscar. So it was enormously successful, and it just won so many awards. It's ridiculous. And then if you then go into everything else that it does, it is just making a shed load of cash for Pixar and Disney, because then it then goes on to become one of the highest selling DVDs of all time. And it was critically acclaimed. It was getting 4-5-star ratings from everybody. It was considered, it's in the American film thing that they do, where the films are of national and international importance, and it's one of those movies as well. So it was huge, and I had no idea how big it was.
No, neither did I. Like, especially at that age, it's just a Toy Story film to me, you know?
Yeah, and 2010 is not, in the general scheme of things, not that long ago. Some of the movies that we've been watching sort of go back to 1999, 2001, 2002. But it's not that long ago, really, is it?
No, I've just had a weird memory.
Oh, let's hear it. So I love these.
I feel like I cut you off there, but, you know. I think when we saw this film at the cinema, when we got home, I forced you to go into the loft to get all of my Toy Story toys down. And I remember distinctly not having the Bullseye toy anymore, because I definitely had one, but there wasn't one there.
How interesting.
That's just come back to me. That's bizarre.
I do think it's really mean that you put the toys in the loft. Do you know what? Look at what
that's
that
why made. They wanted to go in the movie.
Well, that is true. We've told the lots of loving bear anecdote on this before.
That's right.
On this podcast before, where either you or I really wanted one, and I drove all the way to Leeds to get it. It's like a 4-hour round trip. So I found one. It's in Leeds. I'm going to get it. the other thing, and I don't want to sort of embarrass you by saying this, but because the movie isn't that long ago, 2010, it's long ago in the general scheme of things, but you were not 5 or 6 when this movie came out.
No, I wasn't. That's true, yeah.
So if there's anybody that went to school with Sam in sort of year 8, year 9, year 10, when this movie's coming out, you're like, right, I want my Buzz Lightyear jammies back, and I want my toys out of the loft.
I don't know about the Buzz Lightyear jammies.
No, I'm joking about
it. I'm going to deny that part.
But you definitely had Buzz Lightyear jammies.
At some point, yeah, when I was a lot younger.
It's not my job.
It was like only last year. What are you talking about?
I do remember a kind of resurgence in your I want my Woody and Buzz Lightyear toy back, please.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, it was a big thing for me anyway, because there was a very good tie-in video game. And if people are listening that have played that, like the PlayStation 3 version of it, they'll know what I'm talking about, because it's well known to be a really good game. I think it's hard to actually buy now as well, because it was so popular.
The game thing's really interesting, because you always had the game. So that's really a thing we've never covered on this podcast before. There would be a movie that we want to watch, go watch movie, buy all merchandise of movie, finally buy DVD and or Blu-ray of the movie, and then play the game of the movie. Because there was a real... Yeah. Do they still do that? I don't really know if they do that. I'm a bit out of the loop.
I don't... Do you know what it is? I think there's so many licensing issues that they just don't do it anymore. And if they do, it's not quite as big.
Like the movie tie-in of the game and things. I guess it represented an opportunity to kind of relive the movie again in a different way.
I think there was a lot of the sort of Nintendo DS sort of portable games that they were just chucking on because it was a quick and easy thing to do. But they don't really do it anymore.
No, I don't really know anything about kind of modern video gaming. You mentioned PlayStation 3, and that's really the last PlayStation I remember. And I know that there have definitely been a 4 or 5 since then. But I'd forgotten about the game tie-in thing.
Yeah, I think as a decent example of it, the last one that I can really think that I played was when the Amazing Spider-Man films were coming out. So you'd get the next Amazing Spider-Man 2 game or something.
Right.
But now you can't really do that anymore, because there's a big company that owns the rights to making Spider-Man games. So it doesn't really tie in anymore. You can't really do it.
One of the things I love about being old is nostalgia. And us talking about these games, I mean, I can go way back. I remember how good the Aladdin game was on the Mega Drive. And Disney always made really cool Mega Drive games. So there was The Lion King, there was Aladdin. And then there was a Mickey Mouse game as well, which was brilliant. Yeah. I loved that game. And so,
do you remember the Muppet Monsters?
Yes, I do remember the Muppet Monsters game.
I still watch videos of that all the time, because the soundtrack is just perfect.
Oh, wow, yeah. There's a whole other podcast in here when we finally run out of movies. We can benefit of hindsight. We can go back and play the games again, because I'm sure they're all available to play online now. Most of these things probably are pretty easy to download and play. So there you go. So do you have any... I've stolen a few, but do you have any out-of-pocket takes and or trivia for Toy Story 3?
You have, in fact, stolen a few.
I'm sorry.
But I do have a few, yeah.
Go on then, let's hear the ones that I haven't stolen from you.
Okay. So Bo Peep was supposed to be in the film, but she was taken out because apparently surviving the incinerator seemed quite unlikely. But then she comes back in the fourth one, so I guess they kind of somehow managed to put that in anyway, which is quite nice.
I'm going to just have to pause briefly there. Is it Bo Peep surviving the incinerator seemed unlikely?
Yeah, apparently. I think because she's made of porcelain.
Right,
but then
okay.
Again, surely all of them surviving is quite unlikely too.
I would have thought porcelain had a better chance of survival than plastic.
You know what? Probably, but that's not what the trivia says.
It's just a really interesting piece of trivia. Bo Peep isn't in it because she would have died in the incinerator. But then they all should have died in the incinerator. They're all made of plastic. Bits of wood. Woody aren't made of. Fascinating.
But I also just think, who sits down and goes, should we put Bo Peep in this? Oh, no, because at the end of the film, there's an incinerator, she wouldn't survive. Surely it's just a case of not putting that character in from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. And why is Buzz, who's entirely made of plastic, he's fine, he'll be all right. Because surely the melting point of plastic is lower than the melting point of porcelain?
I mean, if you don't want my trivia, you can just say.
No, your trivia is amazing, and I'm sure it's true. I just think it's a really interesting choice. I think the reason why Bo wasn't in the movie is because they wanted to have a love interest for Buzz Lightyear and for...
Yeah. Jesse.
And Jesse. And a second love interest becomes complicated. So that's why she comes back in four and becomes the love interest of Woody in that movie. Because you would assume that Woody and Jesse are going to be the love interest, but they aren't, are they?
Yeah, I think I always assumed that growing up. And it was a bit weird at the time, but it's all right now.
Yeah, fine. I love that bit of trivia, by the way. I promise I didn't mean to be so challenging of it. I just thought it was interesting. Sorry, I love that bit of trivia. My bad.
Okay, sure. This is the first...
It's astonishing we haven't fallen out during this podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll get there.
But yeah, it's only a matter of time.
Run away. This is the first Pixar film to be released in IMAX theatres. I think... Oh, no, I don't think this was the first one we saw in IMAX.
No, definitely not the first IMAX movie we saw. Was this a 3D movie when it first came out?
I think absolutely it was, yeah. Especially with it being... The third film. It was a thing back then.
I had Toy Story 3D. I was thinking just as I was watching this, that there was a real fashion for 3D movies, I think between 2007, 2014 or something like that. And a lot of these movies that we are re-watching, I suspect we originally watched in 3D.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it was definitely in 3D because they did adverts for it being in 3D, little trailers,
right?
And you can buy it, and that's the other thing I was going to say was I think they put the other two in 3D as a marketing thing because you can actually get it on Blu-ray 3D as well.
Wow, isn't it really interesting that 3D never really became a thing? It was fashionable for a while, and then it just people stopped doing it.
Yeah, to the point where they tried to make 4D a thing and it didn't work. Because, but now there's 4DX, so that works better.
Because I could be wrong here, but I think the first of the Hobbit movies was in 3D.
It was, and they did that. They changed how many frames per second it was as well.
That's right. They did the 70 frames per second. Everybody hated it because it made them feel seasick and none of it looked real. But then it just kind of after that, it kind of people stopped doing it. Is it because he was always watching, it's like watching the movie with sunglasses on?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of movies it doesn't work for because there's a lot of dark scenes and then all of a sudden you're just watching nothing.
I wonder, I'll say a thing and then we won't do it anyway, but we should go back and figure out how many of the movies that we've already done were movies that we originally watched in 3D.
Yeah.
I can only think of a couple off the top of my head. This one, Hugo, was originally a 3D movie.
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man would have been.
Amazing Spider-Man. I don't know.
Do you know what? Sorry.
Go on.
Do you know what? I think Amazing Spider-Man 2 we might have seen in IMAX 3D.
Well.
Yeah.
We knew how to go to the cinema back in the day, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, carry on with your trivia.
Oh, yeah.
That came out like I wasn't interested. Go on then, carry on with your trivia. Heavens.
I can stop.
No, don't, Karen. We love the trivia. It's our favourite bit of the podcast. Not properly.
When Woody and Bonnie's toys use the computer, there's a sticky note near the bottom of the monitor that reads November 2nd. And that's the day the DVD and Blu-ray came out, which is quite impressive. And I've never noticed that before.
Yeah, how did they know that? Yeah, how did they know that?
Yeah.
The future. There's a... did you know, the thing that I noticed, you know when you notice things they put in... Pixar movies, and when you can read about them, there's long lists of hidden things, but every now and again
that's my next trivia, actually.
Every now and again you find one and you think, I found that, that's it. So the number on the train at the beginning of the movie is number 95, which is the year the original Toy Story movie came out.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've seen that, that's got to be what that is. And I don't know if it is, but in my mind it was the train number 95, because that was the year Toy Story first came out. By the way, I've said those words, and it's just made me feel staggered and amazed that you weren't born when the first Toy Story movie came out.
No, but I did see it in cinema, hence the time machine.
Ah, of course, yeah, you did, right, yeah, time machine, yeah. So, yeah, I didn't, that's a film that's now, wow, here we go. This is one of those moments where the universe makes you feel old. Toy Story, the original movie, will celebrate its 30th anniversary next year.
Wow. That's got to mean it's back at the cinema, surely.
Well, I think it will, because Toy Story 5 is coming out. So there'll be a big old fanfare. I wonder what they'll do with Toy Story 5.
Oh, there's rumours and, what's the word I'm looking, storyboards that have come out.
Right. It'd be interesting
to
see.
It's heartbreaking. I hate it.
Why?
It makes me hate Bonnie, actually.
Why?
apparently Bonnie becomes an iPad kid and so abandons the toys. And I think, I could be wrong about this, I think the idea is that the toys go back to Andy.
Right.
Or maybe this is just something I've read of someone's idea of it, where, or what I'd like anyway. Andy's got his own kids now.
Right.
And he gives the toys to his kids.
If you
That's the ending I want to see.
I think that's the ending we all want to see. If you think about it, Andy was, let's assume that he was 8 in 1995, okay?
Yeah.
Which means he was born in 1987, which means Andy is now 37 years old.
Yeah.
Wow. Crikey, that does that make you feel old?
Yeah.
Do you think the genius of Toy Story is, A, the toys never age, so the voices can stay the same because you never have to see the actor.
True.
And you have this cyclical story. I'm a toy. This is my world. I'm cared for by a child. That child will eventually grow up. I have then the dilemma of whether I get left behind or whether or not I find a new child. And so you could, that's a story you can tell over and over and over again, right?
Yeah, it's also quite depressing that all of these toys get to see all of their carers die.
It is true, yeah. It's the curse of immortality. You may well be able to live forever, but every relationship you've ever formed won't last. It's why the elves leave Middle Earth.
Yeah, that got really dark. Trivia.
Trivia. Back to trivia.
It's the last one ever. Just as a little Easter egg thing and a throwback to Wally, the batteries that are in Buzz are from By and Large, which was the company introduced in Wally.
Pixar are genius for that, aren't they? There's always, I think there's a poster of one of the cars on Andy's wall and things like that. They're just so good at that cross-pollination thing. I think the real genius of Pixar, and I'm sure I said this before, is that they will make a movie that every single adult wants to see and is therefore perfectly happy to take their children to. And you can watch that movie on a number of different levels. You can watch Toy Story 3 as a really action-packed, quite funny, quite interesting story about toys escaping from a prison, or you can watch it as a kind of essay and thought piece on friendship and love and care and what all of that means. So as an adult you can watch it. I had a very different response to it watching it as a much older, sort of 14 years after it first came out, than I did watching it, you know, originally. So we'll come to that later, but yeah, there you go. So we should definitely mention Randy Newman, who did the entire film score for the movie, including all of the songs. He wrote everything that's in it. There were a couple of tracks. I think this is possibly the first Pixar movie that features tracks from outside of the Randy Newman canon. So you get the song Dreamweaver, Le Freak by Chic. The original version of You've Got a Friend in Me comes back. And there's a couple of other things. There's a Judas Priest song in there somewhere. But pretty much the whole thing was written by Randy Newman. And it's a good soundtrack, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's perfect. I think he's always really good at making these emotional cues.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's really good at doing heroic scenes. And the scene where they almost die, you can feel the sort of intensity and emotion behind it as well. Mm-hmm. And I think he's just such a good job of it. And also, he's a great lyricist. Is that the right word?
Exactly, lyricist. Yeah, he's so good at it. And actually, I mean, the accolades, I mean, it won the Grammy for Best Score in a Soundtrack. The year. And it also won the Academy Award for Best Original Song for the song which was We Belong Together. So, you know, whether or not you sort of buy into the awards season or anything like that, it's such a good soundtrack. And it you know, it wins a Grammy and an Oscar. You know, you can't argue with stuff like that. He's incredibly well respected, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was also the first soundtrack of a Pixar movie to not be released on CD. It was only available through the digital medium.
Cool.
So there you go. And it's a great soundtrack. I've really loved the Spanish Buzz as well. Made me laugh. So funny.
That brings me perfectly onto the thing I'm desperate to say.
Say it. Go.
You have to absolutely remember, and I mentioned this in the last episode, and you said, oh, you might forget. It's like, not at all. Almost did. Barack Nastravi.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah. We So, for the people out there that have no idea what we're talking about, I think it was this movie where we would make up fake languages.
Yeah.
And sing the song You've Got a Friend in Me. And we would sit in the car driving along and it would just be a thing that we would do, and it was, I suspect, inspired by the Spanish Buzz, yeah.
Barack Nastravi.
Barack Nastravi. And then I can still remember the words of this made up song that's sort of oddly kind of Russian sounding but isn't, you know. Mm. So we won't sing it for you here. But no, I do know that whatever happens, however old we are, if I go Barack Nastravi, you'll know exactly what it means, right?
Yeah, it's like a code.
Eventually, it kind of evolved, and it became. I don't know if you remember this. It became Bumcrack Montravi.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good times. Those are the days, eh?
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on. Anything else we feel like we should say about the marvel that is Toy Story 3?
I think I could go on forever, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
I'll do it as a cliff notes. There's a cameo from Sid.
Yes.
Don't know if you got that one. Yeah,
yeah, saw
the
that.
The film's
a
bit shouty as an adult.
Yes, I think so too. It's a bit. It doesn't let up, does it? I did get that. It's relentless. That was the word I was trying to get out of my head there. It's relentless. Yeah.
More cliff notes?
I love the cliff notes. This should be a new section.
Yeah. Woody's storyline is a lot more interesting, in my own opinion. Just because it's more adventurous than everyone's getting beaten up and tortured, essentially.
Yeah. And then, absolutely. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the designs in the CGI. It's perfect, especially the transition from Lotso being old and new, or new and old, because it just works, and it's sort of, you can see the age of the toy as it happens. The
CGI is great. You can tell in this movie that they finally mastered fur and water, but not black bags, black refuse bags.
Yeah,
they had not mastered that. There was, every time you saw one of the kind of black sacks, I don't know what they call them in different parts of the world, we call them black bags and you put your rubbish in it, they're not quite right. They hadn't quite got that right, but water and fur absolutely nailed it.
As a side note as well, if you look at the difference between the dog in Toy Story 1 and the cat in Toy Story 4, there's such a big difference. Uh-huh. It's quite impressive. Yeah.
It is actually quite a fun exercise to go back and watch Toy Story 1 in light of Toy Story 3 and compare the differences in the animation, because Toy Story 1 was groundbreaking. It was the first movie of its type, and it stands up pretty well, but you can totally tell the difference.
Yeah.
Did you know that they had to, when they came back to make this movie, they kind of, I'm going to lose what all these technical terms mean, so I'm just going to say it as I understand it. They kind of then tried to upload all the original designs of the Toy Story characters into the new computers, and they no longer worked. The computers were just too advanced. So everything in this movie was redesigned from the ground up, because they just couldn't get the... They just didn't work. It just was incompatible with each other.
That's interesting, because you kind of also wouldn't notice.
No, you wouldn't, but they, yeah, absolutely from the ground up. So it'd be like, it'd be like trying to get a floppy disk or something like that, and then trying to make it work in your MacBook Air or something. They just couldn't get the compatibility to work at all. It's extraordinary that they could do, actually, in 1995, what they did with Toy Story.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's quite impressive.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's move on to scores, shall we? Unless you had any more cliff notes to share.
I've got loads of memories of going to Toys R Us. It was the Toy Story 3 was the big wall at the back for this one. Uh-huh. I don't think I bought anything, but it was cool to look at.
I remember the big wall in Toys R Us. That was always cool.
Yeah.
Star Wars Episode 3 is the one I remember the most.
It was, yeah.
Because I think it was there forever. I think they just left it up. I gave up after that.
Yeah, completely random. Not at all connected to the podcast. I remember when Transformers had the wall.
Uh-huh.
And we went in one day, and there were two of the big expensive ones that were reduced. And you said, you can only have one. That was the hardest decision of my life. So there you go. It was between Megatron and Optimus, but it was like a shadow version of Optimus.
Oh, you definitely have to. Yeah, you have to keep that in the podcast. I can't believe if I had a time machine, going back to our original question, I'd go back and I'd buy you both of them.
Okay, I was going to say, like, if you went back and didn't buy me any of them.
you can't have any of them. I can't make you make that decision. No, you can have them both.
You distract past Dad and go and jump in and say, oh, Sam, you can't have any of these, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, what? You just said.
Yeah, wrestle past Dad to the ground. You're getting none of them, and run off. There we are. Let's go on to scoring the movie. I chose the movie, so I get to go first for the score. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I gave it an 8 out of 10 from my memory, which is a pretty decent score for our podcast, because I remembered it as being really good and really entertaining. I had forgotten how touching it was, how warm and sad it was at the end, and I'd also forgotten the pure joy of a happy ending, because you just don't get that anymore. So this movie ended beautifully with Bonnie, the new owner of the toys, and Andy going off to college but taking the time to play with his toys with Bonnie. I was quite moved. There's like little tear coming, and I was
it broke my heart.
It's just so lovely. And so I'm going to go up to a 9 because of the joy of just a really good happy ending. And I think the only reason I'm not going to give it a 10 is because it's a little bit long, gets a little bit saggy in the middle. It's an hour and 45 minutes long, and I just think it sags a little bit in the middle. But it's definitely a 9 out of 10 for me. I thought it was great, really liked it.
I guess it's my turn then.
Certainly is.
I think, as I sort of alluded to at the beginning of this episode, that my score hadn't changed, and admittedly it was still an 8, but I think I've quite enjoyed the chat that we've had, and it's been nice to relive Toy Story, I think, and to be able to sit down and talk about it again. So I think I'm going to copy you and go up to a 9, because I think it pulls on all the good strings, the heart strings, I suppose. And it's a really good nostalgia film. I think the benefit of I've been a bit older seeing this one when I was a kid means it's stuck with me a bit better than, I mean, like, it's the, say, for example, the Toy Story 2. That wouldn't have stuck with me quite as much as a kid. But because I remember seeing this one, it did. So I think I'm quite happy with it. I like it. It's great. 9 out of 10.
The final thing I want to say about this movie is it's nostalgia squared, right? Because you can watch it now in 2024 and be nostalgic about watching this movie in 2010. But I was nostalgic about watching the movie in 2010... from the movie that I saw in 1995. And there'll be a whole generation now of people who remember that movie from 95 and the next one, 2010, who when Toy Story 5 comes out, will take their own children to watch it. It's the most magnificent kind of thing that they've done with this, because the toys never get old, but the people that surround the toys will always get much older.
Mm.
And therefore, there will always be an audience for this movie. Always.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Toy Story 5, we would go and watch that together, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Of course we would, right? And because it's going to help us to relive Toy Story 4, Toy Story 3, and so on. And it goes on for infinity and beyond.
Nice. I think we should end it there.
Definitely a nice way to finish right there. We always forget to do the one-word review, so should we slip that in now? Our one-word review of Toy Story 3.
Yes.
Okay. I chose the movie, so I have to go first, yeah?
Yeah.
Can I go with a hyphened word?
Absolutely.
Because I really want to do
Spider-Man rules.
I want to do two words. So I've put a hyphen. Okay. So I'm going to go back to what I just said. My one hyphenated word review of this movie is nostalgia squared.
Nice. My one word review was just a note that I put. It's kind of relevant. It's chuckles.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
Might be the best character.
Might be the best character. He didn't get a mention, but it's a really good one-word review. So it's your turn to choose a movie this week, Sam. So what's it going to be?
It is. So I had had an idea to just pick a completely random movie that we might not have thought about in years and that a lot of people might have forgotten about potentially. But then I was recommended from my sister a different film which fits that same bill.
You have a sister.
So we're going to go with that one.
Apparently. Oh, wow. Interesting. Is she going to come on the podcast like a special guest?
We can hope so. Okay. But
we'll see. You never know. Okay. So we have a film that no one's ever heard of to watch. Let's do it. Well, what is it?
It's The Curious Case. No, I was going to make up a film then. It's the 2004. Nope. It's the 2006 Gil Kenan Monster House, written by Dan Harmon, who's one of the writers. Shout out to Community there.
Wow, Monster House. I am going to have to reach quite some way back into my memory banks. I remember, the only thing I can remember about that movie is the poster, which I seem to remember as being blue in colour. It was an animated movie, right? And a big scary house. And presumably we're doing this because it's round about Halloween time now.
I think it'll release just after, but yes.
Monster House. Wow. Okay, I'm excited. It'd be like watching a movie I've never seen before, because if this movie is 2006, I can say with some certainty that I have not watched this film for 18 years. Can you say the same?
I can't. I think I did watch it a couple of years ago, but I don't remember seeing it.
Right.
There is one joke in it that I don't think I should remember, but I do.
Okay, well, we'll come to that next week. So you chose the movie, so you have to give me your benefit of hindsight memory score for the movie Monster House.
I think for me, we must have seen it around about Halloween. That only makes sense that it came out. I think I was at that sort of age where I knew it was an animated movie. I knew it wasn't real, but it had some scary moments in it. But that being said, I still don't really remember much about it, even though I've probably seen it more recently than that. So I'm going to go slightly under average here and give it a 4 out of 10, because I also think the animation style's a bit cheap, but I guess we'll figure that out, yeah.
Well, yeah, I always think if I don't remember a movie, maybe what I should do is go right down the middle.
Yeah.
But then that feels a bit generous if it turns out to be rubbish. And a bit harsh. So, but I have no memory of it whatsoever. So therefore, it doesn't mean a lot. So I'm going to stick with you. I'm going to go 4. It's a long way around. Okay. Long way around to agree with you. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10, because I don't know. It could be a 1. It could be a 10. I don't know.
It could be a mistake.
It could be. You know, we've never had. We've never given a movie a score of 1.
Not yet. No.
Either
it's
from
coming.
Either from memory, or as a rewatch, we've never given a 1.
Wow.
Yeah.
This could be this one.
Could be this. I think I know what it will be, but we'll save that for a future podcast. Well, we're off to go and watch Monster House. As usual, you can contact us through our email, thebenefitfindsightpodcast@gmail.com. We absolutely love getting your emails, and we like answering all of your questions. That's become the thing that we do. So thanks very much.
We take smoke signals now too, as well.
We do take the odd smoke signal, snail mail, however you want to get in touch with us. The email would appear to be the most convenient way of doing it. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll be back next week with our Benefit of Hindsight review of the 2006 classic movie Monster House.
What have we done?
I know. Thanks very much. You know, we always do what day it is today. Do you know what day it is today? Is it flashed up for you?
It hasn't, no.
Shall I Shall I help you with it?
You're going to have to, yeah.
It's food day in the United States.
I think food day happened recently for the UK.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
I have food every day there. So.
It was a day that was created in 1975 to raise awareness about the increasing industrialization of American agriculture.
Wow.
So happy food day.
Happy food day to those who celebrate.
I think I'll go and get some food now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all that's left for us to say then is goodbye. And see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Brackness Ravi.
Bumcrack Montravi. Genius.
Genius.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?